Welcome to Tannins and Tunes.
Yay! Live!
I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends.
Hi, friends.
Hi, moms on the internet. There are no moms here.
Mom.
It is too late for mom.
It is after 9 p.m. You are in bed by now.
We
know
so
this.
You are in bed. Oh, you are reading The Secret.
Yes. Jimmy, how was your week?
Yeah, it was so good. I just came back from California, to which I was at a wedding where we had a 32-year-old wine.
That's amazing.
So the groom's father is a winemaker, and when he was born, the groom or the father made this wine, and he saved it for 32 years, and then he opened it at the wedding. It was so delicious, and here's the best part about it was that I knew because of this show, because being on this show for so long now, I knew how to taste it. I was like, ooh, it's very fruit forward with a smoky finish.
That's amazing.
Yeah. How was yours? How was your birthday?
It was great. I'm officially a year older, which is super exciting. I got myself hair for my birthday.
It's very good.
Thank
it's almost
you,
like
thank
Medusa-like
you.
Hair from the Marvel comics, and so it does things. It's very sentient.
Yes.
Out to my nerds. Yeah, that guy.
I also...
It's good now to know what right. things land and what things don't.
Yes, it's very different than us being in a living room together.
Because it's usually just silence when I say comic things.
I also have been fighting a little bit of a sinus infection, but my mother assured me that my voice sounds sultry and not super gravelly and disgusting. So
it's
thanks,
very
Mama
much
Humphrey.
Like the 32-year-old wine. It's very fruit forward with a smoky finish.
Yes. Great. Okay, guys, let's get to it. Let's get on with it.
Over here, yeah.
So we are so excited to have with us today BD
Wine. BD Wine.
Was I supposed to come out at this time? Did I come out
that
at the right
it,
time?
That was it. That was the cue.
What a grand. What a grand.
Thank you so much for joining us today, BD.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
For having me.
BD, before we start, I know that we are here to talk about your good man, Charlie Brown, but we have to address the elephant in the room, and we have to talk about this movie. We'll talk about it, and then we'll let it go, okay? It's so iconic that we have to just say something, right? So you were a cockroach in the movie Joe's Apartment.
I was.
What was that? What was that like?
Well, I think you're saying this because you're a fan of this movie, right?
we all are true devoted
we're all
fans.
True. Yeah. Apartment
devotees. Okay, so let me just say it was a very weird experience, and it was I can hardly remember it actually. It was a long time ago, and let me see if I can remember something worth saying about it.
That's all you have to say.
I would say it was like at the time when we were all called in to do this, there wasn't a lot of information about what we were getting ourselves into. And so I don't think they told all of us, I certainly wasn't told, that they would be speeding our voices up.
Oh,
so that was weird. Like that was like not a happy thing.
You didn't do that yourself. Okay.
No, you get there and you expect to have a certain kind of process, and then you go, oh, okay. So then they have it all worked out for themselves how they're going to do it, but it's a little disorienting. So that was that, and it was. I don't know. I don't think I ever saw it. I don't remember if I ever saw it.
Which is maybe a good thing.
Yes, maybe a good thing.
Maybe the best for everybody.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
The first question of the night.
You just got to get it out of the way, guys, all right?
So we are so excited to have you here for so many reasons.
Thanks.
You're such a dear friend and so excited to have you involved in this.
Thanks.
So can you give our listeners and people that might not know who you are just a little taste?
Oh, gosh.
Just a little.
You're supposed to give the taste. Okay.
I know.
Well, oh, God, Jess.
Okay, so BB is the star of stage and screen and films such as my favorite thing, two favorite things that you've done in terms of film, and this is going to show my personality right here, is Father of the Bride.
Yes.
Because that was probably my first experience seeing BB Wong on screen. And Mulan.
Yes. I was going to guess that's what they were.
I mean, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you are totally known for, you won a Tony Award. You won a Tony Award for And Butterfly.
Yes.
Which you can watch the acceptance speech online, people.
Oh, no, don't. Oh, my God.
It
God,
is on
terrible.
YouTube.
Terrible. Yeah. Okay.
And it's adorable.
Thanks.
And the best. And... totally 80s, and that's the best thing that I love about it.
Very 80s, yeah.
Did you have huge shoulder pads? I haven't watched it yet.
No, I didn't. Angela Lansbury did, though.
Yes!
Didn't she?
Well,
right?
Angela Lansbury is a fashion icon. She can do whatever she wants.
No, well, it was true. The 80s. It was totally appropriate. It was great. She looked great.
And then also... You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which is what we're going to talk about here today. And most recently, Mr. Robot, which you just got an Emmy nomination for.
Yes.
Which
congratulations.
Is incredible.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thanks,
that's
guys.
That's amazing. Is there anything else that our listeners should know?
No. I mean,
no,
you know,
that's
I mean.
The highlights.
Yes, you can.
And you're also an amazing director and writer and creator. And
thank you. Yes, I mean, I do like to, starting now, I'm getting into adding that to my identity, and that's important to me. So thank you for saying that. That is true. But I don't, you know, just if you want, if you're curious, you can, you know, use the old Google and figure out if you're really not
there
sure.
There are lots of things.
Because
there's
a lot of the internet.
Yeah.
So you just like go on to it and then
Mom,
you like search.
It's more than Pinterest.
Google internet. Oh, God, I didn't want to put this on the podcast. but we're here now. So I told my mother that you were going to be on the show, to which she like does this entire bit of research for everything. And then she keeps telling me things about you that I already knew. But one of the things that she said was you went to SF State and you went to Lincoln High School, where my grandfather went. He was the first member of Lincoln High School.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Little connection here.
Is that where your family is? Or
yeah, we live
still
in Northern California.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Wow, that's great.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
People
and
here.
Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie,
yes.
And who else? There was this is the most motley group of celebrity alumni at my high school. Terrible,
really?
Not terrible, but you know, interesting, like weird group. Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie and the golfer Johnny Miller and I don't know.
And this bread truck driver named Hank Helmers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
The reunions are really fun.
Yeah,
so much fun.
Do we want to go ahead and get into some wine so that our guests can also drink their wine?
Yeah, let's do
it.
Yes.
Okay, you guys, I went back to BTL. If you listened to the last episode, I didn't go to BTL, and people got very upset.
They did?
They did. They got very upset.
Ooh.
Especially my BTL loyal people, who some of them are here tonight.
Woo! Give a shout out, yes!
So I went back to BTL. And got ourselves a little bit of Gruner. And now, when you say, I don't even know what a Gruner is.
I don't.
No.
Right. I didn't for a really long time. And
it's clear. That's all I see.
It's basically, I call it Riesling's cousin.
Ah.
And so if you like Riesling, you're probably going to like a Gruner. And it comes, this one is from specifically Southwest Austria. And
is Gruner also a place?
Gruner is not a place. It's actually just a varietal.
Uh-huh.
And this one comes from, I think it's Weinwelter, which means like south of somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's wine growing country of Austria, which is super cool. And I was trying to think of like, okay, when I'm choosing a wine for your Good Man, Charlie Brown, what are some of the things that we're going to talk about here? Right? It was that face.
Okay.
I was like, no. This is, these two things do not go together. And I was thinking, okay, well, what are some, like, kids' foods that are also prevalent in wine?
What are some kids' wines?
Kids' wines. Yeah.
What's a good wine for a child?
And I came up with, like, okay, peaches and apples and apricots.
Oh, okay.
And things like that. And also some of the cool things that I came up with, too, were that the soil of this region is super gravelly. And gravel you find on playgrounds all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's brilliant.
Guys!
Oh, my God.
Guys, again, it's one thing to see it, but there's another thing to be in the room as it's happening, right?
Gravel. Gravel.
I am the biggest nerd ever.
Okay. Now, is this gravel, like, wet? Is it, like, maybe a wet rock? Is that...
We are not
is it, like,
going...
tiny, wet rocks all together?
We're not going down the Tasting the Rocks train ever again. So everybody in
does
our
everybody
audience...
Have one?
Everybody has your wine.
Yes, does anybody does not have one?
Great.
I got some extra right here, so...
So everybody take a sniff of your wine. So swirl a little bit.
A sniff.
Take a sniff. I mean, if you're not getting white flowers and fruit,
mm-hmm.
like citrusy fruit, like lemon, lime, some of that peach in there. Is anybody else? Am I crazy? Anyone? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, totally white flowers. It's just something that I smell all the time.
Like honeysuckle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, apparently I'm not as well as I know. I just...
This also really cool about this wine is it's a family winery. So the father owned it for his entire life. The son took over in 1973.
And now a dog owns it, Snoopy. You're a good man, Charlie
Another
Brown.
Another connection.
Great.
And they've been doing some really cool things with the winemaking process and expanding into different varietals, things like that. Okay, everybody take a taste.
Ooh.
Okay.
Sparkly, almost.
A little effervescent.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Really?
Is it a sparkly?
No, but I mean, does it just taste that way, or is it really got, like...
It is slightly effervescent.
Wow, that's interesting,
you
right?
You can kind of, like, see the bubbles. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I was trying to get rid of them, but I realized you can't really get rid of them. No, I thought it was just kind of like, you know.
B.D. Wong, anti-bubble.
Well, no, I thought they weren't supposed to be there.
In a typical still wine, you would think that. But this varietal is known for being just like the hintest.
Yes, it is.
Of a bubbly.
They're tiny, tiny little. Yeah. That's really cute.
It is adorable. It gives us the stone fruits that we've been talking about, like those peaches and apricots and things.
Yeah.
But it also has a spiciness to it.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Tangy. Right? Tangy.
Tangy. I like that. Yeah, definitely tangy. And in some of the notes, because we all know my pages and pages of notes that I have here, they do say that you should be able to taste a little bit of baking spice on it, kind of like a graham cracker. So everybody taste your wine again and see if you get that.
You should be able to?
Mm-hmm. I'm not getting it.
Well, you start imagining things when they say.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit on the finish.
Imagine a transformer like Beetlebub or Optimus Prime. Is that Ford? Yeah, I do.
Baking powder? What did you say?
Baking spices.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, like nutmeggy.
Yeah, or like a little bit of cinnamon in there.
Okay.
I'm not getting it.
Well, they don't know what they're talking about,
yeah.
Then. The makers of this wine don't know what they're talking about.
What I do like about it, though, is it has a nice long finish on it. It's a great wine that goes with every food out there. Seriously, every single food. This wine actually goes really well with sushi, which is hard to find in a wine to balance out the wasabi.
Oh,
I can see that.
It has to be, like, heavy enough and have enough body to hold up to that, but it also can't be too overpowering, and it just has to, like, hit that right mark.
But this is a wine that you would not necessarily find at a sushi restaurant. I mean,
probably not. But if you were home, you got
takeout. Oh, right. Oh, I see. Okay, yes.
It goes nicely with rice. It goes nicely with the wasabi,
uh-huh.
And it creates a really, really nice balance.
I can see that. Yeah.
Come and pick it up. BTL. Can always do it.
BTL.
BTL.
BTL. Still not a sponsor.
No, not yet.
Anytime you want to be.
If any other store wants us to promote your wines, just let us know.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Okay.
So what I'm assuming that the process was you auditioned and you got it and you started rehearsals and it was a hit.
Yes, the thing that I remember the thing that jumped out in my memory about the whole experience was one, we went on a tour before we came to New York. And so we were in four different cities, which I'd never done before. Mm-hmm. And I'd never workshopped or developed a show out of town in that classic way where they change the show every night and they give you new things and you put them in and you're really have to be on. And you have rehearsal during the day and then you go on at night and you have to remember all the changes. And then on the call board, they put color-coded notes on the thing, you know, this sequence is now going to end with this, and then immediately after the following, this is what happens instead of what happened last night, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And so this affects the following costume changes and the following blah, 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 you know, all this complicated stuff, because the show is so, those of you who don't know the show, it's very, it's a series of little scenes and sketches and songs and vignettes of comic strips, of Charles Schulz, Charlie Brown comic strips. And so there is kind of an ongoing, what seems like an ongoing plot-ish or thread of things connected together, mm-hmm. but really it's a day in the life of Peanuts, basically. And it's very cute, and it was originally an off-Broadway show that played, in one of those tiny, tiny off-Broadway theaters downtown in the Village in New York.
In 1967.
In 1967. Yes. I didn't know that, but that's 1967. And it was a big success in one of the very long-running off-Broadway shows. And
everybody did it at camp.
Many people did it at camp, yeah, and in churches and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So and in fact, I had done it. I had done an amateur production when I was in high school. And it just happened to be a show I was really fond of because I had a connection to it because I had done it before.
Right.
But we went on a tour for four cities, and that process of developing the show, is that the kind of thing you want to talk about?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that process was super grueling and maddening and fun. If you're really into it, if you're a nerd, like I am about, you know, the process and all that, it was really fun, but really hard. And the cities were, Skokie, Illinois, Wilmington, Delaware, St. Louis, Missouri, and Detroit.
There you go.
And
big stops.
Yeah.
Big stops.
And also doing, as these tours often are, as anybody who's ever been on a tour knows, the gigantic theaters that really have no business showing have a musical with six people in it and hardly any set. I remember at one theater, I guess it was in St. Louis, where the first row of people was so far from the stage, you couldn't believe how big, like, just cavernous, and we were doing our little, cute, little, colorful show. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that process was really interesting. Andrew Lippa was the composer who wrote He wrote two brand new songs for the show.
And then kind of reorchestrated.
And reorchestrated it and gave it a more 90s feel and a more contemporary feel at the time. And he restructured and rewrote the opening number in a huge way. And that was one huge thing that we changed when we were in Skokie. And it was a kind of a brainstorm that he had at the last minute and stayed up all night writing this song. And then all of a sudden the next day he threw this song on the table and we all had to learn it really fast.
Right.
And that was exhilarating and kind of scary and stuff like that. And it sounded, I remember because I had done the off-Broadway show, I was really scared of it because it was so jarringly contemporary. And I was used to the sweetness of the original single piano kind of thing. And all of a sudden it was kind of like there was a whole, rhythm thing and percussion and stuff that really
scared me. But I'm sure it was super important to let the audience know, hey, this isn't what you're used to.
Yeah.
This is to do it fresh.
Yeah, exactly. The whole thing was done fresh and it had never been done that big before. And that was the other thing on the first day of rehearsal I was really worried about, that it had a giant set with automation and things moving on and off. And it was beautifully designed by David Gallo. But I remember the entire process was full for me of this tug of war of my memory of its sweetness, and that I felt like some of the sweetness had been lost. There's sweetness that you cannot strip from the show, like happiness and stuff like that. It's just there. And so that was always there. But there was a kind of razzmatazz to it that it didn't have before that I was really nervous about. But it was a great experience.
So there's sometimes where they're trying to make a small place feel big, and they're sometimes trying to make a big place feel small. Is that how you felt? Were you guys trying to fill the stage or fill the space of the large Broadway and tour? Or did you guys try and, like, bring everybody... Did you guys try to make it intimate? What was that like? Again,
yeah.
There was only six people. And
I felt like the... You know, I was very... You know, it's kind of like Juan was learning and wanting to be a director eventually. Mm-hmm. I've worked my way towards this point where I'm kind of directing now. And so I remember now when I look back, I'm thinking, oh, I wouldn't do it this way. I wouldn't do it this way. And I thought that, yep, because I felt very strongly about what was an inherent quality of the show, which was so, it was very sweet and very humble.
Right.
And it had built, they had these little square wooden blocks that they reconfigured to make a sofa or make different things. And we had these giant, gorgeous, Lucy and Linus had this giant sofa that was, when we sat on it, we were tiny on it. You know, it was a big purple sofa with black, yep, designs on it. It looked like a comic strip sofa. And we were sitting on it, and we were really small, and it was really great, but it made me feel like the show was overproduced.
Right.
And I think, mm-hmm, I was kind of wrong a little bit, because the show was being done on Broadway. What are you going to do when you take a show that was so tiny, you know, like in a theater not much bigger than this one,
right,
where it originally played? This is the context for that show. What we're in right now is a small black blocks theater with, you know, less than 99 seats in it.
Yeah.
And it was like that, with a single little piano. And here we had a band with five orchestra members, and it was just bigger
and
brighter.
And Michael Mayer was directing.
And Michael Mayer was directing, and it was on Broadway. So it was Broadway-itized.
Yeah.
And it was something that I had to really... I had to kind of really get my mind wrapped around it. When I look back on it, though, now I think I should have been quicker to do so, because that's how it should have been done.
Well, and especially I was thinking about, okay, setting myself in the time period, and if I was an audience member,
mm-hmm,
what would I have expected,
yes,
from the show? And I think that if you're paying top dollar for a Broadway show,
yeah,
then you expect the razzmatazz, the,
yeah,
lights and the set and the everything. But then what's cool is getting people in the seats that didn't normally come to the theater because they remembered it from, oh, I did this in high school.
Yes,
or,
right,
I did this at summer camp.
And they got to see the fancy version,
exactly,
of it, and that made them happy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of am all about, for me, my personal taste is a lot about theater and, like, actors creating things and theatrical moments, not just... Well, when you need something to come on, you push a button and the thing comes,
right,
on.
Right.
I like figuring out a way that the actors play a part in the scene changes and all of that. So I thought there was a way to make it Broadway without all of the kind of obvious Broadwayness of,
right,
it.
Right, right.
But I was coming out of, you know, there was a whole movement, mega musical kind of movement that I was resisting at the time.
Right.
Oh, shows are being so overproduced. There's a helicopter that's coming down out of the ceiling and all that stuff. And I was like, this must stop.
And
we
I
must,
heard that
you
they
know,
tried to bring a helicopter,
yes,
in to Your Good Man Charlie Brown.
Yes.
Just,
yes.
Yeah.
Got,
whole helicopter.
Got cut
song.
On that tour.
Yeah.
It got cut on the tour, yeah.
Well, and this was one of Michael Mayer's first big directing.
It was,
forays.
Yeah.
And especially,
yeah,
into musical land.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
if our audience doesn't know, he's also, he won the Tony for Spring Awakening,
yeah,
American Idiot, all those, like,
yeah,
Rocky Rock shows.
Yeah. And he also did Your Good Man Charlie Brown.
And Your Good Man, you know, Charlie Brown. Right?
His cutesy little kid. You know.
With a young Kristen Chenoweth as well.
Kristen Chenoweth and Roger Bart were the breakout stars of that production. And they, it was really amazing experience to watch that happen for them while the show's going on. We're,
right,
we're all, like, kind of working on the show, and you don't know what's going to happen, how the audience is going to respond to it, and then to see that happen is really exciting.
It's so cool to imagine that you got to be there in that,
yeah,
in that moment.
It was great.
That's so cool.
Now, are you guys all going to come back for the reunion Snoopy, the musical sequel, that I've heard is coming in 2020?
Is it?
I'm
a huge fan of Snoopy.
It's a fun show.
I love that show, and I love that score. I think,
yeah,
that is a great score. And I was a big fan of that show when it was on off Broadway, in the 80s, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it. I think those songs are
really
just great.
It really is a great score.
It's a much more of a Broadway score than the original Jurgen Mann Charlie Brown score.
Right, right.
And so it lends itself more to a Broadway production. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a 2020 sneak
peek. We're ready.
Yeah.
Audiences are clamoring.
Let's do it.
Frozen out, Snoopy in.
That's what happened.
Yeah, at the St. James.
Well, and what I think is cool is that when Jurgen Mann Charlie Brown was up for the Tony Awards, also Peter Pan with Kathy Rigby was up, which, we know, is my favorite.
Yes. And I have a really soft spot in my heart for that production, too.
It's great. And Annie Get Your Gun with Bernadette was also up at that time. I mean, powerhouses on Broadway across the board.
It was, I think, the beginning of, like, that period of time when all the theaters started getting booked. You know, there was there was pre-Disney, New Amsterdam, pre-42nd Street renovation, and then, which was really very bleak. And then after that, slowly, after that time when those theaters opened on 42nd Street, it became stronger and stronger and stronger. And this was 1998, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was... You were starting to see, oh my gosh, all these revivals and all of these.
Yep. And Fosse was coming up.
Great
Parade.
Shows, yeah.
Yeah, remember. Like a great
Parade, yeah.
Yeah.
There, I mean, there could also be a case to say that that ushered in this sort of golden era that we are seeing now.
I think so. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of Jurgen Mann, Charlie Brown, there was a revival recently at the York Theater.
Yes, right.
In 2016, where they did it with actual children.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought you said with actual dogs.
That too. Actual children, which I wish that I would have been able to see it, because I think that would be hilarious and also terrifying. No, as a babysitter, I can't imagine any of the children that I babysit.
Come. Over here. No.
She's on.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, you know, in the show, the characters are like 6.
Right.
But they didn't use 6 years old. I think they used 10 years old and 11 years old kids and stuff like that. And I think that's a logical, you know, in the spirit of revivals and how you reinvent a show or do it again, and whether you just do the same thing that you saw before or you do something new, that's a logical thing to do. Okay, well, let's do Spelling Bee with real kids now and see what that looks like, you know.
Oh, gosh.
You know, like, because also, if you see School of Rock or these shows now, kids are freaking
amazing.
So you could do it.
Yeah. What are we putting in the water? These kids are amazing.
I literally have to compete against actual 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it's getting real tiresome.
Yeah.
I also did hear that when they do School of Rock, when they revive it, they're going to do all geriatrics. They're going to go the other way.
Well, speaking of that revival, I looked up some other 90s musicals that have recently been revived for our game.
Oh, boy.
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now. Oh,
I didn't know we were going to sing that. All right.
So, I know both of you. And I know that you are musical theater nerds, for a fact. So I made a version of this game that was way too easy. And it would have been very boring, and our audience would not have liked it.
So now
we have the harder version.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
People who, like, I know, audience can see it, but listeners at home, BD is staring me in the eye, like, with daggers, being like, I am going to destroy you. I'm going to kill you. This trophy's mine.
Well, how does it work, the game itself?
So
like,
game
you
itself,
shout out the answers, or?
So, today we're just going to be like, me, because we don't have a buzzer or anything, so just like, me.
Ding, ding, ding.
And today's version, we are going to play lyric game.
Oh, God. Okay.
And I have other clues that are like the previous ones that I had that were way too easy. So, if we need to go to those, we can. Okay.
Okay.
So remember, these are 90s musicals that have since been revived.
Okay.
And we need to say the lyrics?
No, I'm going to give you the lyric.
Oh.
And you tell me which musical.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
I think we're just going to end up shouting it out, frankly.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, number one, we're watching Jewish boys who
falsettos.
What? That's my show, guys. Beanie's like, who is this guy that I'm in this podcast with? That's my show.
It's a good one. Okay.
Such a good one.
Here we go. Number two.
Yeah, that's the last one I'm going to get.
This is the hour. This is our land. We found the power in our brother's hand. I also have an alternate lyric. So
Band of Brothers the musical.
Nope. I can also give an alternate lyric.
So, we'll read that one again.
Yeah, of course.
I don't think I know this.
This is the hour. This is our land. We found the power in our brother's hand.
I don't know.
Does anybody in the audience know?
Do the alternate.
Alternate lyric. And in a strong GI's embrace, flee this life, flee this place.
Oh, Miss Saigon.
Yes. Saigon!
Oh, no. Okay.
One of my favorite shows.
Wait, there was a revival in the 90s?
No, it was a 90s show that's been revived.
I don't know how this
show
works, apparently.
You got the game now!
Yay!
Okay. Let me see.
Just daggers in my eyes.
Okay. Number three. If I had gypsy hair and a face to match it, no traces anywhere of a wayward hatchet.
Oh. Drood.
Nope.
Oh.
Lizzie Borden, the musical.
Nope. Susan Schulman directed this. It's about this tale of acceptance, use my notes, highlights its scarred title character who triumphs over...
Violet!
Yeah!
Oh, Violet! Yeah. Yes! Oh, Hatchet Face!
Hatchet! Hatchet Face! My mom is like, yay, Jimmy, you got one! okay, number four... Okay. And this time will be bigger and brighter than we knew it. So watch me fly. We all know I can do it.
Yeah.
I also have an alternate lyric for this.
I know that, but I don't know it. I can't remember what it is.
Alternate lyric is, Madam's a living legend. I've seen so many idols fall. She is the greatest star of all.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard.
Yay! Hi.
Yes!
Production was... incredible. Right. Truly incredible. Okay. So this is our last lyric question.
Uh-oh.
And then we have a bonus.
Okay.
Okay, last lyric one.
Stressful.
You get me to rise like fish to the bait and tell me to wait while I'm waiting for life to begin.
Oh, What's on this Island?
Yes! Is anybody else as excited about it as I am?
Yes.
I am thrilled.
Yes.
I cannot wait. Like,
that's a lovable show, man.
And any like info that comes out about it, I just eat it up.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm
it
ready
is your
go.
Star Wars.
It might be my Star Wars.
You're just like, what's next? Oh, J.J. Abrams is directing it now? Michael Arden's out and J.J. Abrams is in? Directing Once on This Island? Oh, yes. Lens flares everywhere.
Okay, so for the bonus... I don't have a lyric,
uh-oh.
But this is, can you tell me, what is the longest running revival?
And it Chicago.
Over- yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say, it opened in 1998. It's still open today.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I think I remember that. It's like, when it first came out, it didn't do so well. And like, maybe even a year, not even that. And then they revived it, and now it's...
It opened in 1998?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because, you know, it was at the same theater as Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, which didn't last that season, but I guess
really?
It was the next show.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's at the Ambassador?
At the Ambassador.
Or did they... Oh, okay. So,
oh, well, maybe... No, it was at the Ambassador. It's always been at that theater, hasn't it? Or did it move?
Because it's at the... I think they moved it. They moved the revival to the Ambassador, because that's,
oh, okay.
That's where it is now.
That makes sense then.
And I think that's what happened.
Yeah,
and you're
that's
right.
Right.
Like, that first year was kind of funny, and then I think they moved it to the Ambassador.
No, the original production,
okay,
he was saying.
Oh,
with
Cheetah
and Gwen Burden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about it? What? How does that feel like? Okay, so yeah, it may not have survived the whole, like, season, but it is an iconic show. And it's an iconic run that you were a part of. And, like, everybody who knows, is it, I don't know, can you speak to that? Or what is that?
About, you mean the being part of something that is a thing? Is
yeah,
that, yeah,
I guess.
I don't know. You know, I don't think about it that much. I have my own personal memories, which for this particular show are really strong and really warm. I have great friendships that I made in the course of that show, which is always an important thing to me. And I don't always stay friends with everybody that, you know, you just bond with certain people and stuff like that. And that was personally, that was the time when we were in Chicago, when we were in Skokie, was the time when I was, I don't know how to say this without sounding corny, but I was making the decision to become a parent.
Yeah.
And so I rented a truck I rented a car. They didn't have a car, so I had a truck, and I drove from Skokie to Oak Park, Illinois, and went to a sperm bank, and I made a deposit there. And that was a memory of connection to the show.
Right.
My son wasn't born until 2 years later, but that was a really strong memory that's attached to this show, is that how my life changed, yeah, from that point on. And there were other things about the show, the process, and there was one other really identifying distinction about this show, which was that it's the only show in Broadway history ever to have three shows on one day.
Wow.
We did an 11 o'clock, a 3 o'clock, and an 8 o'clock show of Your Good Man Charlie Brown on Saturdays. Cool. And they came to us and asked us to waive the equity rule because they thought a lot of kids would want to come and they wanted to do it. It didn't turn out to be a very successful thing, and I don't think it'll ever be done again. But it was insane.
So was it, yeah, a 9-show week, or was it?
No, it was an 8-show week with a longer break, but three shows in one day. And three shows of a super high-energy show.
Right.
Like, we were dancing and stuff, you know, it was like...
Yeah. When we did Cats together, we did three performances, yes, of Cats in one day. Uh-huh. And I can't imagine.
Yeah, this wasn't Cats either, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Just to kind of like do this, you know, like, yep, it's like you get ready for it and then you do it, and then doing it is a whole experience, and then you get ready for it again and then you do, yep, it again. And then twice is plenty.
Yes.
But it was fun, and we felt special. We thought, you know, people were like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, we all voted to do it. It had to be unanimous." And they came to us and said, "This, we think this will be good for the show," and we all agreed to it. And we all said, "If you feed us breakfast on Saturdays and do this and that, we'll do it." And we did it. And that bonds us now, all of us, to this day. That's a thing that nobody has ever experienced, I don't think.
How were those snobs? Did you guys have Saturday nights on Broadway?
What is that?
A snob is a Saturday night on Broadway where you just, like, have drinks and...
Oh, you mean, like, afterwards?
Yeah,
you mean, like,
after the
hang
show.
Oh, I never knew it was show. Called that.
I've never,
yes,
heard that before. Now I feel like I'm, like, behind.
Well,
I'm a bartender.
No, they were non-existent because we went to bed. Because
you guys were like, yeah, I need to go home.
We went
now.
Home because we had to do the show on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
so beautiful, though.
Well, BD, thank you so much
for
joining
us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. This was a blast. We have loved having you here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And just a little business to wrap everything up. Thank you, audience, for being here.
Thank you, guys.
So much.
Yay. Did you have fun? Did you enjoy yourself? Did you enjoy the wine?
The wine.
I can't see any of you.
I just want to give a couple shout-outs to, of course, follow us on all the social media, all the things, Instagram and Twitter, all that stuff, and remind you of our review challenge for the next 3 months.
Yes.
We are going to be matching every review on iTunes with $1 towards relief for Hurricanes Irma and Harvey. Because we have people that were affected by it, and we feel really strongly that that's something that we should still be supporting, even if
support kind of dwindles off in this next month or so. For the next 3 months, every review for us on iTunes will match with a dollar, send it off to charities down there.
And we're still doing, if you write a review, we will pair a wine with your username. We're still doing that. We're not throwing that out.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot
of... Not one or the other. You get both.
So many things.
Yeah.
Jimmy, where can people follow you?
People can follow me at Jimmy_Robertson on Twitter and at Jimmy Robertson on Instagram. And they can, I don't know, I hang out in Harlem a lot, so find me there too.
And you can find me at JMHumphrey1 on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find me at BTL on Sunday nights.
BTL.
We're there, keeping it real. Great. Well, guys, thanks for coming. This was awesome.
We did it.
We did it.
Thanks, guys. Good night. Bye, Mom.
Bye, Mom.
Blanket and me.